Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey, podcast listener, this is Rob Cisternino. I'm the Rob, and Rob has a podcast, and the new season of Survivor is just getting started, and we've got new episodes for you 5 days a week. Join us for interviews with your favorite past Survivor players and this season's losers right after they get their torch snubbed. Listen free to Rob Has a Podcast, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. And if you like the show, why not share it with a friend or leave us a rating and review on iTunes?
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on Monday. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend, and thanks for making, what's the name of this show?
CarCast.
CarCast, the hottest. That's why I'm the most enthusiastic about this. It's the hottest, it's the number one car podcast in the universe. Thank you. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Matt, the Motorator, DeAndre over there.
Hello.
Cars, 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 yeah. And more cars. My God. I've been trained to kind of zip it around the family a little bit because of their wild disinterest in my passion.
I know. That's why you walk Phil 9 times a day, so you can call and
talk cars. With Matt. I walk and my dog, and I call Matt, and we talk about car stuff.
Yeah.
And I realize I'm not a person who wears silk jackets that have Corvette emblazoned on the back or
right.
Any of that stuff. I have no interest in that stuff. I have no interest in the sort of accoutrements that involve the lifestyle. I just want something with the cars.
Right. You don't have to dress like the car you own. But yeah, although the loafer game at Pebble Beach is strong.
I love that loafer game. I would challenge everybody who's listening, whether it's Amelia Island, possibly Arizona, but for sure Pebble Beach, and we should do this, Max Pata, leading into the next Laguna Seca, Monterey, Pebble Beach, whatever. Take pictures of the craziest loafers out there and send it in to us because that's the best part of the trip.
So the other version of that is because the weather's nice there and everybody's got the loafer game, at the Scottsdale auctions, it's a little chilly, sometimes rainy. You walk around and you try to find out how many jackets that have a diamond stitch pattern, some sort of quilted pattern on the jackets. It's funny because I went around with my friend and we counted like 30 of them. And then at the end of the weekend, we realized that the sweater I was wearing on the top of the shoulders of his diamond stitched.
Yeah, but that's because you were a Special Forces British Ops right? commander all those years. And the sweater. That's a tactical sweater you're wearing.
I can't even get it. I was flipping through the channels and there was some terrible movie on with Channing Tatum and he was in the army. And in the scene, his epaulets on top of his shoulders that have his rank on it. And throughout the scene, they were upside down and was driving me fucking insane.
You know, as former...
And then the next scene, they were right. They were right. And I was like, how did you miss this? It's so obvious. It's like,
well, I wouldn't have known that because I don't have the military background that you have. But in Ghost Rider, when they put those goalposts.
That's right.
All right. So we have Road Atlanta.
Yes.
Coming up.
The MIDI vintage racing event.
They're having a big Datsun. I guess Nissan Datsun is sort of the mark.
Yeah, yeah.
When they have these events, they usually have a sponsor or they pick a mark, and that mark this year is Nissan. Hold on. I'm going to sneeze.
All right. Then I'll tell you that it's April 27th through 29th at Road Atlanta.
Right.
Which I've never been to.
I have. I will be there. I will be excited to drive there the first time. I drove my Datsun Roadster Lightweight there. Interesting car. I traded it to Les for Paul Newman's 510 logbook before he destroyed the car, which is kind of interesting. He proposed it. I have no idea. I know I got the short end of that stick. It's a weird car because it's a roadster lightweight, a 2000 roadster lightweight. They only made a few in this country and brought to this country. It's very rare, but it's been crazily modified with VW fenders and stuff on it and all that kind of stuff. And it works.
That was the orange car.
Right. Yeah. And it's like a really cool piece, but it doesn't really have a place in my collection. Although I'm sure we could put it on Bring a Trailer and make some money off of it. It's just not, it doesn't have a lot of vintage history. It's got some weird stuff. It's Craig Breedlove, the world record speed holder, Bonneville Flats guy. His brother built it in like Denver and like autocrossed it or something. It's got a couple of pieces on it. Like John Morton said, he made the oil pan for it. So it's got some like BRE pieces on it.
And if I remember correctly, because the Roadsters are full frame cars, they're actually a little heavier than you think they would be. And to make the lightweight, they would drill holes, lightning holes in the frame. But that does take some structural integrity out. And I remember that if you like lifted it on like a 4-post lift and try to open the doors on the lift, I don't think it opens. It gets a little snug, a little
on
tight.
A 4-post or a
Because it's sitting on its tire. It kind of skews it a little bit. I mean, the cage and everything helps, but it's an interesting method of how they got it done. But it kind of throws back to like, you know, the Porsche 935s had like a ridiculous like aluminum roll cage in it that would do nothing.
Right.
You know, and now you have one hanging on the wall because it weighs a pound and a half.
Yeah. Anyway, that car went to the MIDI several years ago. And I drove like on a parade lap or something with it, but I wasn't in the MIDI race. So this year we're taking the 610. The 610's a Bob Sharp 610. 610's a nice piece. You guys have seen it. It's kind of my first vintage car. It's an authentic from the era Bob Sharp car. The history's a little unclear, but the short story is, as told to me by Bob Sharp, when he would race these cars, 510s, 610s, Z cars, he would do one up in full race prep, and then he would do another one up, same paint job, and I guess many of the same parts, but not full race prep, and then they would bring one car and park it at the local Datsun dealer. And by the way, that's why that car says Datsun dealers on it or whatever. They'd park that thing at a Datsun dealer, and then the other car would be at the track.
Yeah.
And they'd be racing that car. Now, if Paul Newman, as he famously did, I think at Road Atlanta, when he came down the bowl or the downhill and then got out of control and hit the tire barrier, the hay bales or whatever, and bent the unibodied 510 or the unibodied Z car or the unibodied 610, they then quickly go grab that car out of the showroom, bring it back. Probably, obviously, you're swapping out the engine and you're swapping out the transmission or whatever it is. But the car would have to have a roll cage in it because you couldn't weld up and fab up a new roll cage.
Yeah.
And some of this is what Bob told me. And then others just sort of logic of me, like sort of connecting the dots. Like you couldn't do camber plates on it. You couldn't do a roll cage on it. You couldn't do a fuel cell in it, like on the fly, so to speak.
Fire suppressant, like all
like
that stuff.
Yeah, like at the track that
gear
weekend.
Changes and transmission with the new gear, like that you can do. So they had essentially the backup car stored at a car dealer during races, and if they needed it,
they would bring it with them.
Yeah.
To whatever the local dealer was. I think Bob would like go, let's have a raffle to see like the local Nissan dealer at Road Atlanta or in Atlanta or the one that we're going to at Sears Point or Mid Ohio or whatever. We'll park it there. But if we need it, we'll use it. I think that was kind of the conceit. So this car was not the car that was raced. It was the car that was parked at the dealer. So it has no real race history, period race history, but it's in fantastic shape.
Yeah.
Because the
other
cars,
got a story, though. It does have this great story to it.
The other cars got the shit beat out of them because they were racing all the time and all that goes along with that, whereas this car, original paint job, pristine. At some point, then somebody got hold of it and they made it into full vintage race prep and they used it a little and then they sold it to me. We should figure it out because I'm trying to think, like when they were displaying it at the Nissan. Well, yeah, probably it had aforementioned roll cage, camber plates, yeah. fuel cell. You just couldn't fab that stuff up at the track.
I wonder if any of the files we have, do we have any pictures of that car at the dealer? You know, maybe not online, but maybe in some of the boxes that Sharp sent over.
Well, either way, our friend Dave Stone has the real car, and Troy Ermish is putting the final touches, yeah. if he hasn't already, on that car, which is cool. And I'd rather have his car than my car, but I still like the fact that my car still has the Bob Sharp lacquer on it. He put on it in 1974, or whatever it is. Like, it is all original. All right. So there's that. So we're going to Road Atlanta.
Yeah.
We're going to race that car. We're looking for an Airbnb. I had a listener reach out to us and say he has a house right behind the track.
Really?
And then he said,
"Sounds kind of stabby
in the woods." In the woods.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But I said to Matt, "What's it like?" He said, "He sent a few pictures over." I said, "What do you think?" He's like, "Eh." And I was like, "All right, but we've done a lot worse than that." Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we may just take that listener up on his offer.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. That's Road Atlanta. That's the 610. We're working on transportation. We may bring two cars. We may bring one car. We'll figure it all out. I don't know Road Atlanta very well or at all, so I'll try to dial it up on the simulator and take a few laps before we go out there. I'll go check some online stuff, you know, best line through Road Atlanta. Those boring guys on the internet who strap the talk you through their hot lap and their
it's nothing
Cayman.
Like watching somebody's 90-minute YouTube video laps around Atlanta.
Before we did that Trans Am race at Willow Springs, that's what I did. I just went online and watched the guy in his 911 turn a bunch of hot laps. Yeah. And it was like, turn in here. And then it's always that stupid thing, like, when you get to the top of the horseshoe, look for the B in Budweiser on the side of the cinder block building. You should be aiming straight at the B. Don't turn in until you're facing the B, you know? Then they always give you this one. The one that never works is turn 8, because it's so big, it's so sweeping, it's so fast. And they're like, you should see a windmill in the distance. Like, not on the property or anything. Just you're about halfway through turn 8, you're supposed to just look off into the yonder.
Yeah.
And just into the distance. And you'll see a silo grain.
You know, a maintenance worker on the top.
When that silo grain lines up with your hood ornament, you should start turning in. Like, it's weird because the car's vibrating so violently and it's so loud and you find yourself looking off into the distance for some silo grain or something, which means now I'm supposed to start moving it, turning in. Or
yeah.
It never really works. The better idea is find the guy who's faster than you because he's ahead of you and then follow him.
Yeah. Do a couple, you know, like lead follow kind of laps. But,
yeah.
That guy that was running around in the 911 taking his video was his, Were his gauges in pit mode the whole time, or how does that work?
No, only me. He has analog stuff.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Find that guy. Now, Max Zapata, if you type in Willow Springs best line, you'll find a guy in a 911 who will talk you through it. And when you get to turn 8, you'll see that he's talking about these landmarks that are on, like, in different time zones, on different acreage that you're supposed to be looking at and using.
Yeah.
And by the way, I can't even remember what I'm supposed to do once I see it. Something.
You'd just be lucky I found it. Maybe I'm supposed to turn or hit the brake. I forgot what he said in the video. But but if it's a second too late or a half a second too late, who knows? But
so Rich McDonald is going to come in. He's the sales and promotions guy for Super Performance. These guys do all the rolling chassis of all the cool cars. Do we have him narrating because I got a lot to talk to Rich about. Do we have him narrating this thing, Max Zapata?
Where? You want to move to the side of the track for the entrance to 8. Most cars will not need to brake. Many cars won't need to even let up on the gas. It's a very fast corner. You want to dive into it and get toward the inside edge of the track as fast as you can. There are washboard-like bumps in turn 8, and they're the worst mid-track. Just ride the inside, accelerating gradually, and looking for that very late apex. There is a red mark on the track for that, but you won't be looking at the track at this point. You'll just be going really fast. Here's turn 8 at speed.
Now I'm looking at this going, I'm not.
My only tip for turn 8 is that, as scary as it is, people very rarely go off the track here. It can hold a lot of speed. Many cars should be flat on the gas from the exit of 5 all the way to the exit of 8. It's hard to get your brain to accept this initially, but that's what repeated visits to Willow are for.
Yeah, I've never been there. Now, you got to find the one where he's telling you to look for the marker, or maybe it's the top of the horseshoe where he's telling you to aim for the B of the Budweiser. But no, Chris, you got to get out of turn 8 for him to tell you what to look for. Going into turn 8, yeah. And also, I was looking at it, and he's like, oh, he's going 125, 128. Like, I'm going, I'm going to be doing 163.
Yeah.
And his 128 seems exceedingly fast already. But
yeah, but now after the fact, after you've done it, you've realized he didn't have the aero that you had.
That's right.
And that makes you grippier going up there, you know.
Again,
it was interesting.
A good conversation to be had before the race.
Before the race.
Would have been helpful. Anyway, you got it? All right, sorry. Now here's exiting. Oh, there's a turn 9? I didn't know that. I thought it stopped at 8. All right, he'll talk you through it, Mr. Personality.
Up track, and then doing some moderate braking when you're settled on the short straight between 8 and 9. Then things get tricky. My tip is to spot the new building that's been put up near the entrance to the track.
All right, how far away is that building from where you are?
If he didn't have an arrow pointed to it, you'd never... I don't know what he's talking about.
Toward the left edge of the track. But you want to do that drift very slowly, and you want to use the building you see as a reminder to look further to the right to a white water tower. Which is
oh, my God.
I told you.
You want to spot that tower and drive toward it. You want to let the line between you and that tower determine the path you'll take to the left side of the track and the turn-in point for turn 9.
I went around that turn.
If you had the time to look down.
I went around that turn 40 times. I think the first 3 times, I was like, where's that water? I was like, oh, shit, the car's vibrating
too
loud.
You're going so fast, there's no way you're going to see it. Here's the problem when your track is surrounded by the worst environment ever. It's just dirt out there, dirt and dirt. That's it. That's why every other track is so much better than Willow.
It's just a spot, a building, and then another water tower miles away from where
it's
you are.
It's a speck in the horizon.
It's a speck.
Keep going with it. I want to see what happens later. All right, so we see the first building.
You see that there are 3 red marks for cones on the very left edge of the track. If you have followed the path to the tower and resisted the urge to turn in too early, you'll want to finally make your turn in for 9 right around the middle of those 3 red marks.
Which you don't
They're
see because you're going
160
speed, miles an
but
hour.
That white tower is.
No, it's not. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the distance.
There is almost...
Yeah, let him continue.
There's always a cone at the apex of 9. You do not want to miss this apex by very much at all. When you get it right, you'll feel the car get drawn down to a low spot on the track right by that apex. If you feel that whoomp, you should know you'll be fine on the exit of 9. At that point, you can use as much of the left side of the track as you need. You'll probably be somewhere between 80 and 100 miles per hour when you pass that apex cone. If you got it right, you can relax, check your gauges, and accelerate down the main straight to set up your next lap.
I remember just watching this video thinking we're all going to die. That's all I can think of. When he gets to the top, when he gets to the horseshoe, he'll tell you to look for the Budweiser, the B in the Budweiser sign, and point your car at the Budweiser sign. We'll take a look at that in a second. First, I'll tell you about Omaze, yeah. Man. Omaze, they're giving away their sixth Model 3 Tesla, the sixth one ever made. It belongs to Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, man.
Yeah.
Proceeds benefit Big Green Learning Gardens and food literacy programs. I'm telling you, there's one of these threes. It's like a gunmetal gray. It's right down the street from my house. I see it all the time. It's very nice. It looks like my wife's ass, but just, I don't know, 20%, 15% smaller or something, but it looks good. Omaze offering once-in-a-lifetime experiences and prizes. All you have to do is support a great cause for your chance to win. Donate as little as $10 for your chance to win. Check out all the prizes at Omaze, all the stuff they're offering at omaze.com/carcast, omaze.com/carcast, and enter for your chance to win. Use the promo code CARCAST to double your chances. And even if you don't win, all the money's going to a great cause. So why not? All right, let's see what he wants us to do with the horseshoe here with the Budweiser building.
Straight up the hill, ignoring that rumble strip you pass on the right. It's not an apex. And ignoring the fact that the track is turning a long couple of heartbeats before you do. I tell students to head for the B in Budweiser on the wall.
Where? I can't even see it. The point is to not start turning to the right
until the alternative is to shoot off the track.
Also,
you want
I think
to
he just
enter
missed
turn
it.
Four to the left, much further to the left than your instincts will suggest. You want to keep the arc of this corner as wide as possible, where your speed will drop down to its lowest point on this slowest part of the track.
I aim for that B and I went right off the track.
You can't see that B at all. All you see is glare.
To be fair, it's much clearer than the water tower in the other county.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's about 3 miles closer to you, so it is a little bit easier to see.
Right. All right. We put the 935 on the dyno.
Yeah, we did. So we took it down to, I think the place was called Redline in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
And. I know when you drove it at Monterey, you felt like it was a little down on power. We sort of narrowed that down to possibly ignition issues, plugs, and wires. We replaced all that stuff with some amount of money.
Yes.
on those plugs. And just immediately firing it up, it seemed to run better.
My take on the weekend was it started off okay, but had probably some electrical issues. And as Sean put the spectroscope inside the cylinders after we removed the spark plugs and the wires, found that the two center cylinders on the right and left bank looked dry or had a lot of carbon or whatever it was. But his professional analysis was these two were not firing when this car was running last.
And or certainly misfiring. That's consistent. Why
there was way down on power toward the end when I was trying to turn the boost up and get more power and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So we replaced the plugs, replaced the distributor cap, replaced the rotor, the rotor had a crack in it.
Yeah.
And then the wires. And then we put it on the dyno.
Yeah. So we took it down there and we started running it a few times and was able to look at actually like how much boost was being made. That was the other thing is I think we swapped out or the guys over there swapped out to a functional boost
like
gauge.
Newtons or whatever.
Yeah, it was something to more readable.
Right.
And the boost was...
Wait, is it Newtons? What is
it? No, it had bar. It was
a bar. Yeah, there's pound and bar.
Yeah, we swapped the bar out to PSI so we can get a little bit more
natural.
Yeah,
it's like 14.9 per bar pounds or something.
Yeah.
So they run them
it's
at
14.7.
Like sorry.
Yeah.
Well, and they run them, I remember just thinking it's right around 15. So one bar is 15 pounds. And so they run them at like 1.3 bar.
Right. Right. So we were able to look at how much boost was going on. It was running pretty consistently and it was running well. What we found out was we noticed a little just a little hesitation, just like almost like a little bit of a misfire. And we don't think it's ignition now. We think that was all kind of fixed. So while we were there, we ended up taking the – there's like a little tube. It's like a little 90-degree tube that comes right off the turbo. We welded a bung into it, put in the O2 sensor, allowed us to get more
drill
data.
Drill the hole, weld the bung, put in the sensor.
And it was running a little rich, a safe amount of rich, not a – you know, not an overly amount, safe amount. You can run it. And then we found the sweet spot to be about 19 pounds of boost. We tried 18, mm-hmm. we tried 19, we tried 20. It wasn't really making that much of a difference. So 19 is where we're at. And you're running consistently in the 565 range of horsepower and 455-ish, 458 pound-feet of torque. And this is, keep in mind, this is an air-cooled engine with twin turbos that has a big intercooler and it needs those side vents and the fenders to do that. So using a couple of fans was the best we could do. But we were running 563 horsepower, 565, 568 consistently under temp, which is pretty good, pretty strong. However, after a good cool down, about an hour or so, and then we went back under the same conditions and full cool, it hit 589.
Wow, so almost 590. And is it 589 and change, or they just go that high? We'll post photos at carcastshow.com.
Yeah, we got some video of some runs, too, that we'll post up there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and remember, that's to the rear wheels. So you can scrub off 10,
it's about
12,
10.
Maybe, who knows, percent of through the rear wheels. So if you want to get to the crank, you're well into the sixes. Do we have any video of that? No.
Yeah, I don't have any.
Okay, who could have possibly anticipated that? Yeah, where is it?
I didn't know anybody even took video. So,
Did you inquire about who took the video?
No, I didn't. I didn't know. And I didn't know there was video being taken. you've done dynos and no video has been taken.
Huh? Is that a true statement? Let's see. I don't know. The last dyno we took, we put a vid. As a matter of fact, if you go online and you look at, you know, YouTube videos, and it's like, you know, Adam drives Paul Newman's race car at Laguna Seca, and Adam drives whatever. You want to see the one that has the most hits on it? Adam puts Newman car on a dyno.
I know. Yeah. I recorded it.
I know.
Video stuff for this show, I record. I wasn't asked to record this, so I assumed there was no video.
All right. Okay. Well, we have some video.
But here's what I want to say. Matt, you should have said to producer Chris, hey, I got video. And then producer Chris, when you brought up the dyno in the 935, you should have said, is there any video?
I'm sorry, Chris.
Both
we have video.
Both failures, everyone but me. No, I'd like to see the video, and I knew he took the video, so I assumed he shared it with you, because I haven't seen it yet, just for my own selfish purposes. We'll put it up, but I'm saying is I assume you'd just tell him we got the video, but I would assume you'd also go, do you have any video?
We actually have a GoPro camera with a couple of different, moved it around so we can cut something together and get you a couple of different angles.
After I'm dead, well, let my kids enjoy it.
Maybe by the time you're listening to this, I'll have a video.
Well, I bet you would, but I'd like to hear it too.
Yeah.
Was it on your phone or something?
Yeah, it's on my phone.
Well,
you can send
it to Chris and he'll find it. We'll throw it up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll put it together in a little more coherently, and when at the time you're hearing this, you can also go to carcastshow.com and find it over there, Max Pata. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. Why don't you get Rich and we'll show him in, Kalen. ZipRecruiter, hiring. Every business needs great people. And a better way to find them, ZipRecruiter built a platform that finds the right candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. 80% of employers who post a job at ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate in just one day. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/car. Try it out for free. If you're looking for a job, if you're looking for the right candidate, let's do it easily. Let's do it quickly. Let's go with ZipRecruiter, and you can try it out for free at ZipRecruiter.com/car. Okay, Rich McDonald is in studio with us. Good to see you, Rich.
Good to see you, Adam.
We will get that. Oops, something went wrong with my stand here.
This is broken.
Oh, it broke. All right. I think we can fix it. All right. I shall fix it.
Yeah.
You talk to Rich, and we'll get this. 9:35 video.
Yeah,
sent ahead.
I think
as
the
well.
9:35 video is being transferred to Kaylin's laptop.
Yeah, we now have to transfer to the search computer, and then we'll have.
Yeah, I didn't see a search computer there. But
all right.
So the Superformance stuff, you guys have the Cobra, the Daytona, and the Corvette now, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Is there a GT40?
There is
a GT40. Right. So here's the thing. There's this new rule now about can you sell like a certain amount of turnkey cars. Does it still have to be that you could sell you could sell somebody a car and then they buy an engine and transmission, they kind of put it themselves?
Yeah, no, there has been a rule or a law that's been passed in 2015 that's going to allow manufacturers to build 500 cars with the engines a year. But the EPA is still dragging their feet on that. So the law actually, even though it's been passed in 2015, it has not yet gone into effect. So we're still back to building the car minus engine and transmission. And that's what we do. So we have a factory in South Africa. We build our rolling chassis as complete cars minus engine and transmission. So we ship the cars over to our showroom in Irvine, and the customer will typically come in to our showroom or even find us online, and they would choose their engine and transmission. We'll send it down the street to one of our preferred installers. We have a really great engine and trans installer in Orange, V's Performance. And they'll put the powertrain in, send it back to our showroom. The customer comes and picks it up, and he drives away in his brand spanky new beautiful Cobra, Daytona Coupe, GT40, Corvette Grand Sport.
So it's really just a technicality. And I'm guessing, is Roush the power plant or the weapon of choice?
Roush and Lingenfelter?
Lingenfelter. We have actually in one of our Corvette Grand Sports, we have one of Kenny's LS3's engines in it. And it screams.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah, if you got the Corvette, you need the Lingenfelter. And if you got the Cobra, I guess you'd like the Roush.
Roush, we also install Ford 427 engines. We'll put Shelby 289s, 427 from the Shelby Engine Company. So whatever the customer wants to put in the car, we'll put in it.
I think I was with Pete Brock, and we were hanging around in we were at the Italian concourse, whatever they had in Pebble Beach, at the golf course several years ago. And we're talking about his Daytona. And he said that the original Daytona, he just didn't have enough time to contour the sides how he wanted to contour them.
Yeah.
He made them really slabby. But he said with the Superformance one that he was able to do the things he didn't have the time to.
Yeah, he was telling us that on each one of the original ones, he actually made slight modifications. No two are actually the same. But now I think working with you guys, he was able to kind of finalize his ideas.
Yeah, he did. He came over with Superformance. I've only been with the company for a year, but Pete worked with the factory and Superformance, and they created the Gen 1 Daytona Coupe. And we actually don't build the Gen 1 anymore. We only build the Shelby Daytonas with the CSX chassis numbers. But, yeah, Pete had a little bit of extra time to do the things that he wanted to do to the original Daytonas, and he just couldn't. Actually, that original Daytona, the first ever, is CSX 2287, and that's the one that Pete designed, the first one. It's the only one of the six built that was built entirely in the U.S., and my father, fortunately, ran that car to his first victory, and that was at the 12 Hours of Sebring in 1964. Today is actually the anniversary, so it's funny that you should bring up that first Daytona, that he won that race at Sebring in 1964. So, pretty proud of that accomplishment.
So, won the first manufacturer's championship for an American brand. Had, crazy story about, going to Daytona and coming in and catching on fire. And if Shelby wanted to refuel it, he probably didn't need to refuel it, but he wanted to refuel it. It was in for tires or something. And then a fire broke out and it was like, they could have got back out going again, but Shelby was pissed and said, screw it or whatever. It's a lot of interesting stuff. Then going to Sebring and having the torrential rainstorm.
That was 65.
That was the next year. And then winning the class at Le Mans and the championship. And then, of course, Ford seeing what Shelby and his ragtag group of guys in Venice were doing with his car, saying, hey, how about you get involved with the GT40 program? And the rest is history. So speaking of GT40s, they have the first gen. They have the Mark II. They had the big block. They had the small block. Which ones do you guys have?
We sell the Mark I and the Mark II. So the Mark I will take a small block. The Mark II will take a big block or a small block. Beautiful cars. They have pressed steel roof, reinforced roof. You got a steel monocoque chassis. They're just absolutely stunning cars. And so we have two or three in our showroom right now, and it used to take, well, the cars are in such demand right now, Adam, that it used to take 13 and a half months to get them built and brought over from the factory to Irvine, but we've ramped up production as of the first of this year. So it only takes, if a customer wants to come in and order a GT40 from us, it takes 6.5 months for it to arrive in Irvine, and then, like I said, we'll send it to one of our engine installers. They'll put the powertrain in it in 6 or 7 weeks, and they come back, they're ready to pick up their car.
Do you offer a street car and race car version, or do you make some modifications to make it more streetable or more raceable?
Yeah, no, we do. On the GT40 specifically, we offer the GT40R, which is a race version. So you want to just track that. The regular GT40 you could put it on the track the hell out of it. The cars are super fast, and you could also drive it on the street. So the GT40 Mark I and Mark II are both street legal cars.
How do you do rims, tires, brakes, and sizes? And I'll tell you where I'm getting to. I had a friend who was building one many years ago, and he said, I'm going with the 18-inch rims because I want the big brakes. And I said, man, the look of that, first the Mark One for early small block ones.
Yeah.
I said, the look of that tire.
It needs
on
some
the side,
meat on
needs
it.
Some sidewall, yeah. Needs some 60 series sidewall on it because it was such a part of the look, that sort of bolt. And if you go with the super big modern rims with the 35 series rubber bands on it, it's going to screw the look up. Like, you get the bigger brakes, maybe you get the better handling, but the authentic look, I'd rather have the smaller brake package and the 15-inch rims with the knockoffs and the 60 series with the little bulge and some sidewall aesthetically. How does that work for you guys? How does it work for your customers? And I'm guessing brakes have come a ways in the last few years, and you can get an effective brake in a smaller package now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in terms of the GT40s, we don't sell any GT40s with 18-inch tires and rims. I mean, people that come to us, they want to get a period-correct GT40. Our cars, only GT40 in the world that actually carry the original trademark and license, comes with a GT40P chassis
Even
number.
Even Ford can't carry the GT40 license. No. They can just say GT.
They can say a Ford GT, but not a GT40.
Right.
Yeah, they're legit. They're period correct. So the people that come to us, not just for the GT40s, but Daytonas, Cobras, Corvette Grand Sports, they want a car that looks period correct. They remember back in the days. They remember these cars, and they want a car that looks and feels and sounds like that. So in terms of the GT40, it's always 15-inch BRM-style wheels. Never an 18-inch low-profile package.
Good.
Tires and rims on a GT40.
I'm in.
I can help you guys.
Yeah.
I'm guessing – I'm just going to guess. 15 nines in the front, 12, 13s in the rear?
Yeah, you're guessing right.
I'm a tire and wheel guy. I have no business podcasting. Yeah. I should be sitting around looking at people's tires and wheels and talking about offsets.
T&W.
Tires and wheels.
T&W.
I'm so obsessed.
Only watches it at night when the kids are asleep. T&W.
I was literally on Roger Krause's website last night.
Oh, that's like porn. Do you have to subscribe to that site?
I'm sitting there looking at our race tires that we're going to run at Atlanta. And I'm like, well, they make the Hoosier R7s. What if I went with the 225/50 series? It'd be a little smaller tire, but have a little bigger tread pattern on there. But I don't know if that would piss off my run group. And how much do they weigh?
That's right. How much do they weigh? Make some calls. Somebody's got to be awake.
So the cars, I'm trying to think. I'm glad we got the tire wheels sorted out. Do you guys work with Bear or Brembo or StopTech or somebody exclusively, or is that also a sort of customer desired?
Yeah, we work with different manufacturers for the rims, and it's not just the GT40. Our Daytona Coupes, our Cobra is the only manufacturer in the world to offer Cobras that are licensed by Shelby American. Our Corvette Grand Sport carries a license from General Motors. So the cars that we build, we're the only company in the world that actually has the license from the original manufacturers.
The Grand Sport is a great historic race car, and it's beautiful. And
it's a great-looking car as well. I remember when it was on tour with you guys. And
it's got onto the radar as of late. Obviously, Cobras have been around a million years. Everyone remembers, and of course the GT40 is awesome platform. The Daytona is a very interesting choice, one I applaud, not one that would jump to the leap of top of your list of, hey, what car should we duplicate? That's very obscure.
It would mind.
Well, I love that car, and I was literally, I've always thought about it. It's beautiful because we all love the big front engine GT. You know, looks like it's got a Porsche Daytona. I mean Ferrari Daytona. It's got that long, you know, that great look. But what is next then? What can we talk about? What are we thinking about? What irons are in the fire?
Well, we're just sticking to what we do. You know, we offer a huge selection of cars with the Corvette Grand Sport, Daytona, the Cobra. And we also offer, we're building now all of Shelby's Cobras and Daytonas. So we'll offer the Superformance Cobra, the Mark III, Mark II, the slab side car, which I think is beautiful. That is my favorite Cobra that we offer. I mean, that's how they were brought over in 1962 when Shelby got the chassis, brought it over, put stuff, the 260 Ford engine in it. When it was brought over in the first early races, they didn't have the big hips on the side. They were slab sides, flat on the side, beautiful, elegant-looking cars, but they were also fast. So when Cobra won its first race, my father was actually behind the wheel, and that was at Riverside in 1963, and it was a slab side. So I am very partial to, I like them all. I like the big hip 427s.
Cobra,
even the 289
you're saying Cobra
FIs.
Daytona or Cobra?
The Roadster.
The Roadster.
Back when Carroll first brought the Cobras over, the Daytona hadn't been even thought up in Pete's head at this point. So it was the Cobra. Billy Krause was the original Cobra driver for Carroll, and he ran throughout 1962. Carroll then hired my father to race in 1963, and he and Kenny Miles were both hired at the same time. And the first race ever for Cobra was at Riverside. Well, that was earlier in the year with Billy Krause, but the first race my dad and Ken ran was February 1963 at Riverside, and my father won that race.
Now, if memory serves, the first time they went out, they really whooped up on the vets and then I think broke or something. But it was clear how much faster these cars were than the Cobras were than the vets. But they didn't get the win, but they got a message sent. Everyone understood how fast these cars were. I did not know that they changed the body. I thought they just came over from AC Bristol and it was what it was, and then they dropped the 260 in it and then later the 289. But you're saying they changed the body?
Later. When they first brought it over, AC Bristol, it was a 260 that was stuffed in. That was at Riverside. They ran the 260 again at Daytona a couple weeks later, and that was it for the 260s. So right after that, Shelby went to Dodger Stadium in the third race for my father, and that's when they first ran the 289. But while they ran, by the way, he won Dodger Stadium too, both Saturday and Sunday. And Kenny Miles again was second place in that day, in that race. But
that's out in the parking lot of Dodger Stadium?
It surrounded the stadium.
Wow,
yeah,
you go around the stadium.
Yeah.
How cool. There's some elevation changes there.
Yeah.
How cool. Do you have, do we got our dyno yet?
No, I texted Matt that I need you to email it to me.
Oh, come on,
oh,
man.
I can't do that because I already tried and it's like 70 megs and it won't let me email.
All right, we're going to borrow your phone for a sec.
You guys are on top of your game. All right, give me your phone and we'll, I'm dying to see what my 935 on that dyno. You guys are a well-oiled machine. Speaking of oil and well oil, how about Castrol Edge, man? Designed for consumers who demand the best, not from their production staff, but from their oil, everybody. Tech advances have made engines smaller, more powerful. That's right. Think about, we're talking about the 260, then you go to the 289, then you go to the 427. 260 is like, that's considered like a 4.5 liter or something today. A four plus liter. That's considered a big engine. Back then, it was considered too small.
Yeah, too small.
For a two-seater made of aluminum. So engines have definitely gotten smaller, everybody, and that's why we need more out of the oil, and that's why we go with Castrol Edge, formulated with fluid titanium technology, 3 times stronger against viscosity breakdown than the leading full synthetic. So back to Cobra, back to all things Super Performance.
Yeah, now that you guys are doing the Shelby deal, it seems like is the Roadster the most popular car in the lineup right now, or is there really something else in there?
Well, in terms of the most popular car, it's still our Super Performance Mark III. We'll sell 6 or 7 of those Mark IIIs to any of the other car that we have in our lineup. It's less expensive, too. You can get a fully built-out, optioned-out Super Performance Mark III Cobra for between $85,000 and $95,000. When you start talking about the continuation Cobras like the 6,000 series, the 8,000 series, you're looking at $150,000, $160,000, so it gets up. So that the price point may have a little bit to do with why we sell so many more Mark IIIs. But our Shelby Legendary Cars division is our retail arm for building and selling the Shelby Cobras. So the Shelbys come with CSX chassis stamps. You can also get a Shelby engine company engine put in them, which we recommend. And that also comes with a matching CSX chassis stamp on the engine.
How, if you wanted to take the Shelby Daytona and you said, I want this car to be as user-friendly as humanly possible. Like, let's just say, I want it to be an automatic. I want it to have big air filters and big mufflers so I don't wake up the neighbors.
Yeah. You want air in it?
I want air. Okay. I want air in a defroster. I want it to handle, but I don't want to feel every bump in the road. Is there such a thing as setting a car up that had a feel? Now, it's probably not going to feel like an Audi A7, but as close as you could get to, like, I would like to make this Cobra Daytona a daily driver. Is there a version of that car?
There is. We'll do whatever the customer wants. We'll set it up however they want. We'll even put a stereo in it for you.
Right.
Does anybody ask for that?
Yeah, a couple people we have put, you know, I don't know why. I mean, the engine noise is all you really want to hear. But
what about like the comfort suspension that Adam's talking about and maybe AC or like some sort of, you know, vintage air system? People say they want to drive the cars. I'm curious, like how many people, is it 20% of the cars or is it?
It's less than that. Again, people that come to us and our cars are so accurately built, that's what they want. They remember the cars. They want to have the cars that they drive look just like the cars that they remember seeing back in the 60s. So the overwhelming majority of our customers want them to look, sound, and feel period correct.
Yeah.
They want to be, when they get behind the wheel, they want to be dropped back in 1963, 4, and 5.
Yeah, but Adam needs Bluetooth. He does a lot of phone meetings.
Bluetooth.
Like a lot of phone meetings.
I don't
we can do that
stick.
For him. like Bluetooth with that works though. Like if you
mine's a little spotty in the jack. All right, we got a little dino action on the 935. Just because I want to, because I want to hear it. The scariest part about a race car is the dyno.
You can't stand in that room while you're doing it. It's so loud.
Yeah. We got to get some mufflers on that car and a vintage air system in there as well. I can't hear a thing. So what that best? That's the 489?
That's the 589. Yeah, that run. That was the big cold run, but I mean, it's so crazy loud in that room. Also, like, a little dangerous because you never really know.
The most scared I've ever been in a race car is sitting in a race car that's strapped down to a dyno.
Yeah.
That's the scariest. It's not in and of itself scary, but then when you get out of the car, you go, I'm not getting back in this car, not on a racetrack, I'm not.
Yeah,
but then on the racetrack, it's much nicer.
It is, and it's louder in the room because it's just, you're just in a room with just cement walls that are just reflecting sound, and you're doing everything you can to cover your ears. But it ran great. We're excited about taking that car to RennSport this year.
Yeah, we are. We should do that. I think we're going to do it. All right, give a little Geico.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about Geico. So everybody's got a to-do list. You know, you're dropping off your dry cleaning, you're picking up some milk. Now you can save hundreds of dollars of car insurance to that list. You don't have to pick up or drop off anything. You just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you need some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. You can go to geico.com.
All right. I'm doing shows at Gore Theater in Cleveland. That's May 17th. And then Royal Oak in Detroit. That'll be May 18th. And then maybe we'll get a show going somewhere outside of Atlanta when we go to Road Atlanta. We'll figure that out.
That's April 27th through 29th.
Yeah, we do in no particular numerical order. April 6th, that'll be before the May shows, obviously, we'll do Madison Capitol Theater and Esports Arena. That's a live podcast. That's on April 21st. And you go to amkroll.com. You can find out all these dates for live shows and everything everywhere. If you'd like to check out some Super Performance, and that is a really cool website, and it's everything you need to see. And I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean, for the price of, I don't know. Yeah, we'll get back to sort of BMW something or Audi something.
Yeah, your Cayman.
Or bottom, sort of lower end Porsche. You could get yourself a conversation piece, man.
Hell yeah.
I think, for me, I go either the Daytona Cobra or the maybe the GT40s, I'd say.
Yeah, I like the Daytona, and I do like the Grand Sport. When you see that thing up close with the leather straps holding the hood down, and it looks good.
Well, I'll tell you, Adam, we just, with Shelby, debuted beautiful Cobra. I think it'd be perfect for you. It's the Shelby Sebring.
It's got the automatic
Cobras
at the air.
It doesn't
have Bluetooth and the bazooka. Boombox in the back.
It's got a period correct CSX 2000 series chassis number. It looks just like the cars when they ran them at Sebring in 63. So the customer can actually choose how they want the car to be liveried. They could choose between one of four legendary drivers. He could have the car liveried the way Dan Gurney drove it at Sebring in 1963, the black with the yellow stripes, number 15. It was the car that was on, what was that, the Ripcords album back in 1964.
You can have the car song, Hey Little Cobra.
I did not know that. Yeah. You're too young.
Too young.
You could have it liveried after Alan Grant, Kenny Miles, or Dave McDonald. Which is my father. So
Race where Dan Gurney's car just quit and he tried to push it across at the end?
He was in a Lotus in that race. That was actually the Daytona Continental in 1962. He also did that at Le Mans where he pushed the GT40 over the line and got disqualified for doing so. Had he left the car – oh, you guys discussed that in your movie in the 24-hour war. Had he left the car where it was and not pushed it, he would have come in second due to distance traveled.
Unbelievable. What a legend. He shall be missed. All right. Super performance. If you want to go .com, if one word, if you would like to go check out all the really bitchin' stuff, and again, us, just go to, do what, Matt? Shift and Steer, Facebook, what shall everyone do?
Yeah, check us out at carcastshow.com, and of course, the episodes every Wednesday with myself and Goldberg as well, and shiftandsteer.com, check it out.
All right, so, until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motor Raider, sorry, D'Andrea. Rich McDonald saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.